Hey, grace and peace to each and every one of you today. It's Captain Roger from the Salvation Army Corps in Grass Valley. And hey, it has been a week for sure. The result is that we are going to push the next piece of our study in Acts to next week. And we're going to spend a few minutes this morning looking at who exactly we're talking about when we refer to the disciples of Jesus and why that matters to us. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of Jesus' disciples can you name? And what are their names? I'm going to give you like 10 seconds to just try to write down the names of all the disciples of Jesus. Go ahead. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, that's long enough. You have probably actually been trying to name the 12 apostles, not the disciples. And you probably have a list that says something like Simon, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, Simon the Zealot, Judas, the son of James, and Judas Iscariot. Which is an interesting list. Now, the Sunday school version of the calling of the disciples goes this way. Once, when Jesus was teaching near a lake, he saw some fishermen who hadn't caught anything all night. So Jesus told them to throw their nets out on the other side of the boat, and when they did, they caught lots of fish. They were so happy, they rushed to the shore, and Jesus said, "Come follow me, and I will teach you to fish for people." So Peter, Andrew, James, and John began to follow Jesus. Later, they went to a town, and they saw a tax collector named Matthew. "Come follow me," Jesus told him. So he did. Jesus then called other men to follow him too, and eventually he had 12 disciples who became his best friends and went with him everywhere. The end. Is that pretty much the way you've heard it? Yeah, I gotta tell you, that's a beautiful little kid story, and it has almost, not entirely, but almost no actual basis in Scripture. So, we need to read this to get the proper effect. Let's take a look at John chapter 1. John chapter 1, starting at verse 35. And I'm going to read today from the New International Version. If you've got a different version, your words might be slightly different, but the meaning behind it should still be the same. John 1, 35. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. And when he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, it's the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked them, "What do you want?" And they said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went, and they saw where he was staying, and they spent the day with him. It was about 4 in the afternoon. All right. So there it was, right there, the calling of the disciples. Did you see those two guys ask Jesus if they could be his disciples? They did. It was when the two of them asked where he was staying, and Jesus said to come follow him. See, that is them making a formal application to be disciples of his teaching and him accepting that application. In verse 40, then, we're told Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. All right, so we've got two disciples for Jesus. And who are the two men? One of them is Andrew, and the other one isn't named. There's a problem for us. Now, he might be Philip. It might be Philip. But he's not named in the text. So it looks like he might be Philip because when we go ahead a couple of verses to John 1, starting at verse 43, it says, the next day Jesus decided to leave for Galilee, and finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." And Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." So, these are the disciples that we know. We can put these on our list. We've got Philip, we've got Nathanael, we've got Andrew. And so we've got three, and we maybe have four, because that other guy, you know, we didn't get his name. Maybe it's Philip, maybe it's not. So let's count some more here. Find Matthew chapter 4. We're going to start at verse 18. Matthew 4, starting at 18, going through 22. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers. There was Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, and they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. So now who can we add? This is our list. We've got Andrew, Nathaniel, Philip, Peter, James, and John, and maybe one other guy. All right. Let's find the next person who's named. You're going to find the book of Mark for this. See, I'm giving you some practice finding your way around the Gospels. It's a great thing about stories of Jesus. We've got four of them that we can use to figure out what's going on. Have you found Mark? All right, Mark chapter 2, verses 13 through 15. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. All right, so we just added someone. Who did we add? Levi. Levi, who we know from other places, is also called Matthew. So how many disciples does that make? Yeah, maybe eight guys. But Mark just told us that by the time Jesus called Matthew, there were many who followed him. Many. Is eight enough to be called many? All right, if you just thought, well, of course eight is enough, you are almost certainly over 50. And if you're under 50, you probably didn't get that. Now, let's go back to the text, though. The Greek word being translated as many is the word polus. Polus. It means a multitude or a great crowd. We may not be up to the size of a U2 concert crowd here, but the word has to refer to more than just eight. Maybe we should tackle this from another angle. What is a disciple, anyway? Well, in Hebrew, there's a word for it. It's talmidim. It means disciple. And in Greek, it's mathetes. Mathetes. And it refers to someone who is more than just a pupil or a learner. It means one who literally follows in the footsteps of his master. In fact, there was this saying that a good disciple was covered in the dust of his rabbi because they would actually walk in line with the teacher. So the teacher would be strolling along, and then the disciple would come along and would walk in exactly the same footsteps as their teacher. So here comes Jesus, and here comes Peter right behind him, footstep, 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 and then here comes Andrew behind Peter, and James behind Andrew, and John behind, and so on. It'd be like a mother duck being followed by a little row of ducklings is what it's going to look like. So when we hear about these dozens or hundreds of people following Jesus, if they're actually following him as students follow a rabbi, what you get is the weirdest, longest conga line in history. But they're not just learners. Being a disciple doesn't just mean learning about your teacher's teachings. It's not like you pick up a textbook and figure out what's going on. You wanted to be an imitator. And not really an imitator, because that was how you learned to be the master. You, if you were a disciple, were trying to learn to be the master. And there are a few places where we hear about this. There's a few places that the followers of Jesus as a group are described. So we get this picture of this group of people who are trying to learn how to be Jesus, how to be just like their teacher, how to be representatives of their teacher, how to be small versions of their teacher. That's actually what the word Christian means. It means little Christ. It means a person who follows Jesus in some way, trying to be like him. In Matthew chapter 4 at verse 25, we're told that large crowds from the whole region of Palestine, Israel, and the surrounding areas were following him. And the phrase large crowds, that is in Greek, polus, oklos. It means great multitudes. And there's a key word here when it says that they followed him, because followed doesn't mean they went to see him. It's not like he's what's on because TV hasn't been invented yet. When people follow him, it's because they are there to act as disciples. They are there to learn to do what he does. All right? Matthew chapter 5, verse 1 and 2 says, "Now then, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. And his disciples came to him and he began to teach them." Why a mountainside? Because when you got a big crowd, if you are speaking from above them, your voice carries out over the top of them. If you're just like standing in the middle of a big crowd, the people at the back edges of that crowd are going to have difficulty hearing what you have to say. There is a great scene in the movie Life of Brian, Monty Python's Life of Brian, where Brian, who has been mistaken for the Messiah, he walks past a crowd where Jesus is teaching. And he's on the outer fringes. And Jesus, up at the front of the crowd, says, "Blessed are the peacemakers." And then at the back of the crowd, there people are like, what did he just say? Blessed are the cheesemakers. And then someone else says, well, I think when he says cheesemakers, he means anyone who works in dairy products. And someone else has a whole different idea of what he just heard. And so anyway, sorry, I don't want to get sidetracked into movies. The idea, though, is that Jesus is putting himself somewhere that most people can hear what it is he has to say, because he doesn't want that kind of mistake. He doesn't want people going around saying, well, blessed are the cheesemakers. Not that cheesemakers aren't blessed, because God bless you, making cheese, one of my favorite things. Anyway, when Jesus is teaching on this mountainside, he's speaking to multitudes. That's not just a handful of disciples. It's hundreds. It's possibly even thousands. How can we be sure of that? Well, we hear about them again and again, and not just as people looking for healing, but as people who saw the healings Jesus was doing as a sign that this was the Messiah they'd been waiting for, the King of Kings. And they came from all over, and they followed him as his disciples. How big did these crowds of people following Jesus get? Well, according to Mark chapter 6, Jesus had led them out into a remote area, and they got hungry. And so Jesus has everyone sit down in groups of 50s and 100s, so that they could be counted. So we know right away there's more than 300, right? Because the words for the groups are plural, so there's at least 250s and at least 200s. And 250s plus 200s is 300. So you know there's a minimum of 300 folks here. However, Mark chapter 6, verse 44 says that the number of men who ate that day was 5,000. But that's just the number of men. We know that at least some of these men also had families with them. We hear about their families in other places in the telling of the Jesus story. Places like where parents send their kids to be blessed by Jesus, stuff like that. So we know that there are families, not just men. We know that Jesus did this radical thing where he allowed and encouraged individual women to be his disciples as well. That for the time was absolutely outside the social norm. However, Jesus did it. So we had male disciples and female disciples and families that were disciples. And when you try to add all these together, scholars looking at this advocate for numbers even as high as up to 20,000, which that seems like too many for me, but I am comfortable with 5,000 men eating representing a total number of people somewhere between 10 and 15,000 disciples of Jesus out in this field. And after Jesus fed them all from a couple of pieces of bread and a couple of fish, there were leftovers. Miracle worker. Now, this is a big group. That's the main point here. This is a big group. In fact, it's too many people, really, to carry on the message. Overall, bigger groups might be better, but for teaching, bigger groups lead to those misunderstandings about blessed are the makers of dairy products, right? About this point, is Jesus has drawn these gigantic crowds of disciples, not just followers, but disciples. Jesus starts to push them that if they're following him, they should be proper disciples who obey his instructions and follow his example in all things. Why does he do this now? Well, because his message was one of peace and love, but that was not as popular among the crowds as miracles and free food. The masses, in general, they wanted blood from the Romans in exchange for the oppression they had felt over the centuries since the empire had moved in and taken over Israel. And this crowd of people following Jesus, this crowd of disciples, started to think that Jesus was going to be the one to lead them to vengeance. Now, that's not a huge leap. This was the concept that people had of who and what the Messiah would be. They were looking for someone who was going to raise a sword, lead an army against the Roman oppressors, destroy them, and then elevate Israel to the lead nation in the world by force. That is not the message or the Messiah that Jesus was bringing, right? So, Jesus wants to make sure that people get his message, not the one they come up with on their own. John chapter 6 records the disciples following him, beginning to plot ways to force Jesus to start an uprising. And Jesus, we see, starts to get good at leaving crowds behind after that time. Like, it says things like, and Jesus went up on a hill to pray and then left the crowd. So he's like sneaking away, right? And at a certain point when he's teaching the larger group, Jesus uses some harsh language and difficult teaching in a way that offended a huge number of the crowd that were following him. And many of his disciples abandoned him. That's John chapter 6 at verse 66, so way down towards the end of that chapter. You can look that up. In fact, you should. Always look stuff up for yourself. If someone says something's in the Bible, check it out. John chapter 6, find Jesus' teaching and how his disciples abandoned him. Now, while I cannot tell you for sure how many stayed, I can say that the 12 stayed. Well, who were the 12? Let's figure that out. Mark chapter 3. So flip back to Mark, find chapter 3. We're going to look at verses 13 through 19. Here it says, Jesus went up on a mountainside and called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12, that they might be with him, and that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. These are the 12 that he appointed. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter. James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. To them he gave the name Boanerges, which means sons of thunder. Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. All right, so why did Jesus call these 12 guys? Well, it told us. He called them to send them out carrying his message. That's why they're called apostles. That's what the word apostle means. It means one who is sent out with a message. And Jesus chose these 12 and focused all of his teaching on them so that they could carry his message out to teach the others. And that way his message was to go out to more people than he could reach on his own. They didn't have YouTube or Facebook or any of that stuff back then. Jesus couldn't just post a video. He had to make sure his message was going to someone who could be trusted to carry his message exactly as he said it out to the rest of the world. Now, did these 12 guys get along and agree about everything? Let's think about what we know about the named guys we've already talked about. We've got fishermen, we've got religious seekers, we've got Matthew, he was a tax collector. You know, people hated tax collectors. They took money from their own people. That's what tax collectors did. They took money from their own people to fund Rome's control and oppression of Israel. Tax collectors were traitors at best. And there was another guy among the 12. He was Simon the Zealot. You know what zealots? were zealots were revolutionaries who were known for ambushing and killing tax collectors. I can't say for sure what did and didn't happen in all their little gatherings, but I'm willing to bet Simon and Matthew did not sit next to each other very much. And we hear about these 12 guys arguing and backstabbing one another all the time. James and John, the sons of thunder, they even got their mom to go with them to ask Jesus to make them the main guys in his government so that they could rule over the others. That led to some unhappy dinners, I suspect. And Judas Iscariot, he obviously had some problems too, for all that he started well. He was the most trusted of their group. He carried the group's purse because ATMs hadn't been invented yet and ancient people didn't take PayPal. But Judas stole from them, and then he betrayed Jesus and the rest of them to the leaders in Jerusalem, forcing them all to run to avoid being arrested. Even after the resurrection, they weren't all on the same page. At the end of Matthew chapter 28, we're told the 11 went to see Jesus and worship him, but some of them still had doubts. And we also know it was never just the 12. There were always more than 12. There were always others. In Acts chapter 1, they decide, well, we have to replace Judas because he died. We'll get to that another time. And said we have to replace Judas so that the 12 can be 12 again, because 12 is a good solid symbolic number, 12 tribes in Israel and all that. So they say, well, you know what, the replacement needs to be someone who has been with us from the beginning and stayed with us all the way through the ascension of Christ. Someone who had been there from the time of the baptism that John baptized Jesus, from that time all the way to the current moment. And they had a whole pool of guys to choose from. And they narrowed it down to just two, a guy named Joseph and another one named Matthias. Matthias eventually gets the nod. He gets to become disciple number 12 in Judas's place. He's the 13th man. All of this brings us back to where we started. How many disciples did Jesus have, and how many can you name? Yeah. You know what? Turns out that's not a question I'm willing to take on. There are over 2 billion people who claim to follow Jesus today. More than 2 billion. I can't speak for the state of every one of those people's souls. I really can't. But I am willing to say most of them are at least as earnest and in tune with Christ as the original bunch. I can name one disciple, though. His name is Roger. He does his best to follow Jesus, or he tries, as best as he understands. And he tries to figure that out, and he tries to make sure that he is not just watching Jesus, not just hearing about Jesus, not just sharing stories about Jesus. He tries to make sure he's following Jesus. I pray that in each and every one of your lives, you can name one person who does the best that they can to follow Jesus to the best of their ability. Amen. Amen. Hey, next week, we're diving back into the book of Acts. We'll be at the end of Acts chapter 9. If you want to read ahead, go right ahead. In fact, if you'd like to read the whole book of Acts, please go ahead and do that. If you got questions, let us know. Questions or comments on this video or podcast, feel free to post them right here on this page or email them to me, roger.mccourt@usw.salvationarmy.org. I'm happy to take whatever, share my sources, whatever information you want. We will do our best to help connect you to it. And grace and peace to each and every one of you this week. Keep this in mind. Wherever you go, you have nothing to fear, because wherever you go, God is already there. You can never go somewhere that God isn't. So, go with God. See you next time.